dbkmediaservices.com. Listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SBCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs, Derek Webb, and Bruce Knox. Well, hello, sports fans, and welcome back to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. This is Season 7, and it is Show 190, all of which have been brought to you by our billboard sponsor, Triple Crown Family Fun Center in Chillicothe, located at 1 Nancy Wilson Way in Chillicothe, right off of Bridge Street, just behind the Hampton Inn. Open 7 days a week from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Give them a call, 740-773-PLAY. That is 740-773-7529. And tell them the boys at SVC Sports Talk told you to give them a call and get a pizza for us. Right, Shane?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, you may have noticed in the open that one of us has rejoined the podcast after being gone for, I don't know, 3-6 months or something like that. One Mr. Derek Webb back with us, and we're so glad to have you.
Yes, thank you, guys. I'm thrilled. Thrilled is an understatement, but happy to be back. It's back in my normal routine now. Fall sports are starting. And, I get to hang out with guys like you. So, I mean, my life couldn't get better.
No, couldn't really. Well, Shane, this is show 190. We were just talking before we started recording that we're going to be hitting that magical 200 shows here, probably, good Lord willing, before the end of the year, or before the end of the fall season, actually, I would think. You want to kind of comment on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just what an amazing blessing. I mean, when I think back, it wasn't that long ago where we were planning for show 100, show 150. For the website to be in year 10, I know when I was sending that out to certain ADs and coaches earlier in the preseason, and they got to thinking about that. Yeah, wow, year 10. And a couple of them were talking about, man, I can remember when you were starting and you were doing this and this. And then they mentioned the podcast show coming on now in year 7. So, yeah, really, really blessed to get to do this for the community. It's something that I think people enjoy. I know I enjoy doing it. Bruce, I know you've been with me from the start. We're so excited to have Derek back. Obviously, we've always said SVC Sports Zone is here just to supplement the area. We certainly can't do what Derek does. We certainly can't do what a Mike Smith does. We're so glad to have him back at WKKJ. I just feel like all the coverage is kind of falling back into our lane, and I just really feel like we have the resources in place now to really give our league its due here in the fall of 2017.
All righty. Well, let's just head right into it. We're going to feature a new segment here. We're going to call that Playing Through. And Shane, why don't you catch us up on that and what that is and maybe give a little explanation there.
Well, yeah, Playing Through segment's just going to be where Derek and I catch everybody up on SVC golf before we get into some of the other sports and other topics this week. Obviously, it makes sense to have that brought to our fans by Crown Hill Golf Club. Give them a call, 740-986-4653. Really encourage some parents of some young players and some maybe you have a brother, sister that's an older player and you're wanting to get the younger sibling involved. Give Kevin a call up there again, 986-4653. They have some great junior going on that. As far as our Playing Through segment here in the early going, Derek, I thought Uniota in the preseason, Ty Schoblock, Jacob Calvin, man, they really got it going. The Gerbers, Luke and Levi, even Max Rose, Chance Throckmorton even had some good rounds. They had taken on some pretty tough courses and were real impressive in the early going. And then, Piketon had some slow starts. They were certainly playing some tough courses, but to their credit, when it came time to perform on the league level, kind of an unknown star, maybe being born here a little bit in the Piketon program of Baden Wooldridge and now Colton Blakeman, we know, Denzel Endicott, we know, getting introduced to some names, Creed Bentley, Avery Dixon, Wyatt Lamerson. I just, you know, I don't know. I felt like the scoring was really down. I kind of asked around to, you know, I know I was out at Dogwood the other day, got a chance to go out and kind of work on my game a little bit before going out to the football game. I stopped by Dogwood to get a round in. I was curious to play the course, knowing that the league had just played there. And, you know, it's an improving course, but I think there are some things that people pick on with Dogwood. But at the end of the day, you know, everybody's playing the same golf course. I was told that some flag positions were pretty tough there, some tough pins, and a lot of 2 and 3 putts, even a couple 4 putts on the card. And you know, but I thought maybe the most interesting feedback there, it came from Coach Aaron Leemaster when I had a chance to talk to him about it. Mm-hmm. He mentioned in our league this year we graduated 23 seniors, and when you think of a maximum of 48 starters, a maximum of 6 on each team. 23 seniors, I want to say like 6 of them are playing college golf. I know a few even went to the football route or playing fall baseball. So we're replacing over half of our league. So outside of those top couple teams, I guess we have a lot of new faces. In fact, Paint Valley, Southeastern, Edina haven't even fielded a team on most occasions in the early going here. So, you know, Derek, I guess patience is going to be the word, but I'm still a little surprised that those top two teams at least – the scoring was so bad, but at the end of the day, you know, Piketon jumps out in front. Just, you know, throughout the preseason, what's some of your thoughts there in terms of what you thought you would see compared to what you did see there in SVC match number one?
I'm kind of with you with Unyota. I mean, they really started strong. You know, obviously Ty Schoblock there is the, you know, I told Dan Drummond, Unyota's a long, long time coach, that, you know, he'd really had a great shot at winning the Player of the Year, and he still might.
But, sure.
You know, who knew this Braden Woolridge, you know, or Wooldridge, I believe. I didn't even know his name before the preseason began. I mean, I had it on Coach Kevin Moore give me that as a like a returner or a you know, expected contributor. But you didn't know who he was with so much that Piketon lost last year. So I was really kind of expecting Unyota to, you know, really, I guess, dominate. That first SVC match, and then Piketon just comes out of nowhere and, you know, kind of throws a wrench in things. And I tell you what, Westfall was right there with both of them as well. They're another very intriguing team with the Felger kid, Brayton Felger there. And then even Josh Cook there, he shot a 43. And, you know, they can stay up there as well. We might have, you know, an arms race, I guess, in this day and age.
Well, and then you had, I know at Pickaway Country Club, where they're going to be playing next, Westfall had just shot a 165 there the other night, and Matt Walker at 38 comes in there. So, you know, Matt Walker, Brad Walker. So, yeah, I think that's a good job of you, Derek, of including them, because they've kind of proven themselves capable. You know, Bruce, he mentioned Coach Drummond. I shared some text with Coach Drummond earlier this week, talking to him about the Pickaway Country Club. He believes they're going to play the front nine this week. That's coming up. I think that's Thursday night, Derek, SVC match number two. Yes, he said that they're going to play the front. And, you know, that's a really neat golf course. That's one of my favorites. You know, what's interesting about that course is I've always felt like holes 5 through 13 are gettable. But keep in mind, this isn't an 18-hole. This will just be a 9-hole. So on the front nine, you know, there's certainly some tough holes. There's a tough par 3 there, the second. Even some of the shorter holes are a little bit tight, and there's a couple long par 4s. The par 5s are fairly short and scoreable, but the thing of it is you really got to keep the ball in play. And I thought Coach Moore made a good point in your interview, Derek, that, you know, what happens with some of these kids is the high school matches are usually set up fairly short. You know, they're not going to bump them back, the tees back usually. And so it's not always about the long hitter, unless we're playing maybe a JC's or a Crown Hill. It's usually a little bit more about putting the ball in play, picking a good line off the tee, and just, you know, hitting the accurate tee shot. So that'll be interesting to me, Bruce. It's obviously early. It's just 1 point that Piketon's up. But, man, give Piketon credit, because they jumped out of the gate fast, and Unyota's going to have to answer.
Alrighty, we will keep you up to date on golf as the season goes along, and with our Playing Through segment, again brought to you by Crown Hill Golf Club. We'll move now into what we're going to call some major off-season questions. In this section, we're going to bring you by C&K Athletic Equipment. They are your local school apparel, fitness gear, sports accessories, headwear, and sports equipment source. Located up there at 116 East High Street in Circleville, 740-477-9828. Give them a call. We can have them, I don't know, what, 3 or 4 years now, and we do appreciate their sponsorship as well. These major off-season questions kind of came in, I think, Shane, just various sources throughout the year, throughout the summertime when we were off, and you kind of assembled them, and they were looking for feedback from the both of you or on these topics. And so we'll just kind of run down here. We got 3 or 4 of them. First thing was they wanted some thoughts on kids repeating the eighth grade. Thoughts on kids repeating the eighth grade. And first, I'll just let Shane take us from there.
Well, yeah, a big topic. Really, this has been going on for quite some time. It's certainly picked up more and more momentum now, and I think more and more people are talking about it. I think what happens here, Derek, is more and more people are doing it, and I guess sports would be the reason. Now, I think sometimes what happens if it's a really, really unique athlete or a special athlete, sports gets even more attention, which makes it even more of a topic. I think a lot of parents would argue, sure, sports are important. Sports might be one of the factors, but to say that it's the only factor, I think, is where a lot of parents will argue. They'll talk about giving the kid another year to mature, giving them another year to prepare to develop into high school student and get that quality GPA, get that extra year of prep for the ACT, get that extra year of maturity going to college, maybe keep them home under your roof another year. You know, I don't know. I mean, I think there's a lot of different arguments here. I guess the only thing I'll say, first, I'll put my teacher cap on. You know, mm-hmm. as a middle school teacher, I think that the most difficult part of this process, guys, is that first year academically. Because what happens is most of the time when this happens, believe it or not, you're dealing with an honor roll student. You're dealing with a pretty good student, and they're doing it for some of those reasons I just went over. So what happens is you already take a pretty good student. If you're not careful, you can really start to form some pretty lazy habits in the classroom. You know, it's one of those things when you're repeating the eighth grade, you can kind of go through the motions a little bit and you're not being challenged. I know the OHSAA's really worked hard on this. I know that they've attempted to put in place where you can't play the third year of junior high sports and so forth. But, you know, I also understand the other side of this. I understand that, yeah, they might want to give their kids the great sports opportunity, but I do think that parents are sincere sometimes about wanting to give their kid an extra year maturity. I mean, what parent does not want their kid to go to college a little bit more prepared or a little bit more maturity under their belt? So I certainly get both sides of it. I mean, if you're asking me personally, I'm not a big fan of it, but I certainly understand the factors. You know, Derek, I know you get this a lot in your coverage, and obviously the preparation for high school in terms of athletics, that is a big deal. Just your overall thoughts on some of the stories you've heard and some of the examples that you've seen, and maybe give us your feelings on it.
Well, I'm kind of with you. I mean, I guess I'm not a huge fan of that either. You know, I believe that if it's you know, fair is if you're playing with kids your own age, you know, when you get to be that senior playing against junior, sophomores, and freshmen. But you're a second year senior playing against, you know, first year seniors, then junior, sophomores, and freshmen. You know, you do have a, if you do it the right way, have a physical maybe advantage. You maybe have a skill advantage. If, I mean, you're older, you've done it for a longer time. Mm-hmm. But you know, I'm also with you as well, where I can see the other side of it. I know it's a touchy subject, you know, I think it all depends on each situation, honestly. I mean, I don't think if parents are holding kids back just because of a sports opportunity, you know, I'm not a big fan of that. But if the kid has, you know, actual problems in the classroom, then I think that, you know, that's no problem at all. But if he's a straight A student and or he or she is a straight A student, and, you know, you kind of see what's on, you know, the writing on the wall for the next couple of years, and you kind of want to hold your son or daughter back because of that, and you want them to play with that other group of kids. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that either.
Well, that's interesting there, guys, because a lot of times what happens in the small school is it goes in spurts in terms of having kind of a special class or a class that's really involved. And then you might get into a smaller class where the numbers aren't very good or the culture's not very good. And so a lot of times, you know, what I try to encourage parents to do is, hey, recognize some of these features or these characteristics a little bit earlier. So I think a lot of times if you do it a little bit earlier, it doesn't draw the attention. Plus, it gives the kid the true chance to develop. You know, Bruce, you're a parent. I guess I would ask you this. I mean, as a father and watching kids go to the next level and be really successful in what they do, you know, what would be your opinion from a parent standpoint on having that kid, you know, going away to a D1 college or just to a major academic institution when they're 19 compared to, say, 17 and a half or 18?
Well, I think the maturity would play a big part in this. You know, how mature is the kid? You know, is it like there are so many factors as you were discussing it that I thought about. And one of the questions I had for you is, are we talking just the eighth grade? Is that where this always occurs, or can it sometime occur prior to that?
Well, I think it certainly can. I think, and probably, if we're being honest, it probably does occur.
Yeah.
In several instances when it is younger, but what happens is when it's younger, we don't know about it as much.
That's...
because if a kid repeated in the third or fourth grade and he or she goes on to be an elite athlete, we probably don't know that in the sixth, seventh, eighth grade as much. But I'm telling you, in a community our size, if it's a pretty special athlete, boy or girl in the eighth grade,
you know,
and all of a sudden we hear, oh, so-and-so's repeating the eighth grade, that's almost like Derek put it, the redshirt freshman. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's a situation. And, you know, Derek, I think the other factor here is I think it goes back to that realistic expectation of what is a college athlete? What's a Division I? What's a Division II? What's an NAIA athlete really, really look like? And I think sometimes parents get misled there, or they don't get informed properly. Don't you think the college expectations in terms of athletics play a big role in this as well?
Yeah, I mean, I would absolutely say that. I think that, you know, look, if I guess to put this bluntly, if you're going to hold – your kid back, you better be sure that he's a Division I, Division II athlete.
Yeah.
That would be my, as a parent, I'm not a parent, but that, I guess, if I were, that would be my decision. And that would be the basis of what I made that decision off of. Let's be honest with ourselves. There's not a lot of Division I, Division II athletes in our area, more so Division I. If your kid's going to Ohio State for football and he's going to be the starting tight end as a sophomore, okay, I get that. But how often does that happen? I mean, how often do the Ben Hartsox of the world come along? So that's, you know, I guess that would be my take on that.
Well, it is interesting, but I will say in some emails and some different things as I put this out on Twitter and had some feedback, I will say that more and more parents will say that sports is a factor. Sports is important because – you know, that success can help you grow in confidence, help you grow in a lot of areas, which we know sports can do. But a lot of parents will tell you that there's a lot of truth in terms of the academic and maturity level. But obviously, if it's an elite athlete, that's not going to get talked about first when it comes to sports fans around the area. So no, that's an interesting topic. Good stuff.
It usually doesn't come out as the first reason, does it?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I thought they need a little bit more work in science. No, it doesn't work usually that way.
Yeah.
Right.
Like you said, they sit there the second, if it's the eighth grade, they sit there the second time and, you know, take the same classes again and so forth. And it doesn't really, you know, you better be sure that I think that they're getting to the D1 level type situation. Well, another question that came in over the summer, this is interesting because I think we've had a couple of these situations last year. Would you rather your team win a league title or make a special tournament run?
Well, this is an old topic that goes back a little bit. Then I hadn't heard it for a while. And, man, it really picked up this past year right around the end of winter. So before I give my thoughts on here, Derek, I'm going to kind of pass this one to you first.
Sure.
If you as a fan – you as a sports writer, you as a player, you as a coach, whatever hat you want to wear, if I could tell you you could win a league title or you could make that special tournament run, what say you?
100% the special tournament run. There's no question to me. I know a lot of people think that, you know, SVC titles are a big deal, and they are, and they're an accomplishment. And I know that that's a lot of every one of our area teams' goals. That's their first goal they mark off during the season. But you know, if you look at a Southeastern basketball team from last year, that's I don't think they cared if they won the SVC title. I promise you, they're not going to remember whether they're going to know they didn't, but they don't care. They won a district title.
And so, would you rather have Southeastern's basketball season last year or Uniota's?
If
Southeastern went further.
Right. If you're talking in terms of wins and losses, I mean, obviously, Uniota. But if you're talking in terms of overall success, I mean, you know, when let's put it this way: if I'm a big Bengals fan, if they go 9-7 but they win the Super Bowl, or go 11-5 and do what they do every year and lose in the first year round of the playoffs, I'm taking the Super Bowl win every time. So if you ask me that question, you know, between Uniota and Southeastern, I want to be Southeastern. I want to have that district title and that banner put up in my gym.
Well, here's my biggest thing. I certainly get where people are coming from. I think the first thing I always need answered is, what's a special tournament run? Is it? Obviously, if you're saying a state tournament, then you're going to make me think a little bit more. Like, you're mentioning Super Bowl. Okay, I get it. Super Bowl champ. You know, what's a special tournament run? Are we talking about making the Convo in basketball? Are we talking about getting to the VA in baseball? Are we talking about a district championship? You know, that cutoff there, because like I said, you're saying you would rather win 5, 6, 7 basketball games and go to the Sweet 16 instead of going to the district semifinal and winning a gold ball in the regular season. And I think as a sports fan, I guess what bothers me here the most, guys, maybe you can help me with this. I just think winning league titles are so special and they're so hard to win that I think our society is almost killing the regular season. And I really worry about it as a sports fan. If we're not careful, we're going to turn into like cross country and track, where the entire season doesn't even mean anything. We're just going to get together one time and run a meaningful thing. You know, and I think what's happened is it's happened all the way up into our professional levels. And then, as always, these things trickle down. I mean, what was it just a couple years ago here? Golden State Warriors. They win 73 basketball games, and then they lose in the NBA Finals in 7 games, and their season's a failure. I mean, I get it; they didn't win the championship, and I you know, that's obviously the goal. But you're talking about a team that started the season with 24 straight wins. They were 55-5 at one point. They were 73-9 on the season in the NBA, and it's almost like we just squash that and we almost ignore that piece of history. Or, you know, like Derek, you and I are huge baseball fans. I bet you right now there's not very many people. We have some really big fans that listen to this show. I bet you there's a ton of sports fans right now that have no idea how special what the LA Dodgers are doing right now would be. You know, the LA Dodgers, the LA Dodgers earlier this year, Bruce, right now they're 87-35. The Rockies are 12 games over 500. They're 20 games back. The LA Dodgers in a stretch earlier this year, think about this now, 43-7. In Major League Baseball, the LA Dodgers just came off of a stretch here about I think it was like 3 weeks ago it ended. They were 43-7. That's the first time since New York did it. And I'm not talking about the Yankees or the Mets. I'm talking about the New York Giants, because it was 105 years ago. But what happens is, what's the first thing you hear on ESPN? Well, they don't win the World Series. It's for naught. Yes or not? They just went 43-7, and it's what we do is we just disregard it. So you're getting these teams. I'll see teams win an SVC title, and okay, they'll get upset in a sectional. I get it, but to take that SVC championship significance away from that just seems really, really a bit much to me. So I guess for me, I need to know what the special run definition is, because I think sometimes we look at, you know, oh, they can't win the big one. Well, they obviously can win the big one, or they wouldn't have won the 14-game SVC grind. Mm-hmm. You follow what I'm saying there? I mean, I just think sometimes we really squash the regular season, and that worries me, because, you know, I think that's just a really important thing for we as fans or we in the media just to pay attention to. So I certainly respect the other side of that. I've had a chance to make a couple tournament runs as a coach and a player, and they're cool to do. The memories you'll have forever. But at the same time, I think the grind of the league is really important.
Now, Shane, would you say that it would be different for football, though?
Well, I mean, I don't know. You know, would you rather go 7-0 and win the gold ball, or, you know, and then get beat or and not make the playoffs, or would you rather go, you know, 7-3, finish second place, go to the playoffs, and you know what? What again? What's the special run? Do you need to win a game in the playoffs? Do you need to get to week 12?
You know, I think a lot of the and Paint Valley is one of these schools, and Pete Holland's been very open about that. You know, Paint Valley's main goal, number one, is play week 11 football. But at the same time, football's a little bit different because not every team does make week 11.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's an accomplishment in itself. And you know, there, I think, well, these last 3 or 4 years where Paint Valley has been in the playoffs, I guess 4, 3 of 5 now after last season. You know, they won one conference title and all of that, and they were happy. But they also played week 11, week 12, and that's their goal. That's what when they come into Tua days, that's what they're preached at. And so I think football is a little bit different of a beast because not everybody makes the tournament. Not everybody's there.
No, that's a fair point. I certainly respect that. I just think that we need to be careful sometimes as sports people saying, oh, they can't win the big one. You know, like Jim Kelly can't win the big one because he lost 3 Super Bowls. Well, he won 3 AFC championship games. You know, they had like, or the Atlanta Braves, oh, they only won one World Series. Well, they won their division 14 straight years, guys. I mean, it's one of those things that, so let's not act like Bobby Cox can't, you know, manage in the big game. I mean, he obviously manages some pretty big games to do that. So I just think, I think we've got to be careful. I'm not even saying I totally disagree with you. I think that I'm appreciating, you know, being someone who was lucky enough in high school to win back-to-back basketball league titles and being on teams in golf that won back-to-back league titles, I don't think sometimes people appreciate how hard that is. People just be like, oh, they were loaded. Well, sure. A lot of times the team's loaded because they worked really hard at it. I mean, so I just think sometimes we totally overlook that, and maybe is realistic, and we'll circle back to maybe there's a lot of programs that don't feel like winning a league title is realistic in trying to prime yourself for a playoff run in a smaller division or a district title run in a different sport. Maybe there's something to that too. So maybe that is where that particular topic has come on so strong here in the last couple of years.
Well, there's a lot more that we could say about that, isn't there? I mean, we could talk about that, and some good points made both ways there, guys. Let's move along to our next topic, and this kind of came along, I think. Well, it's something every year that we hear about, it seems like, about this time, because we've just encountered the Ross County Fair not a week and a half, 2 weeks ago or something like that. Yep. And that is how coaches handle that week, because, you know, the seasons in some instances have started or practices are going on, at least, and scheduling of those practices and so forth. And that kind of leaves a murky situation, Shane, for the coaches, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, I personally grew up about, oh, I don't know, probably about a driver pitching wedge away from the fairgrounds. And I can honestly say I probably didn't go to the fair more than a handful of times throughout my whole childhood. Well, then I was silly enough to marry into the fair fever. And what I failed was, you know, as you get into some of the 4-H families and some of the kids that really get into showing their animals, that you can't even comprehend at times how much money, how much time, how much effort goes into these things. Okay. So I started to, over the last 10 to 15 years, I started to develop an appreciation for just that. So I think when you start to understand that part of it, you have to be open-minded to letting kids go and do the necessary requirements with showing, selling their animal and so forth, and some of the expectations in their 4-H projects. Now, I do think of what happens, and I've seen this off the record from kids at all schools. This isn't just one school. This isn't just one sport. This is just teenagers being teenagers. I think what happens is they start to abuse it a little bit. All of a sudden, they need to be at the fair these 2 or 3 days, and all of a sudden, they need to be there 6 days.
It's a slippery slope.
To start to call it a quote-unquote family vacation. I had 3 different people through email, text, or face-to-face conversation talk about how it's a tradition. This is where we stay, and we do that. And I get that because, again, my family has 2 or 3 different campers out there. Fortunately, I'm not one of them, but my family has that out there. So, because if it were up to me, you know, I don't know that I would care too much. But again, I've now been able to see it through a different lens. So my point is, I think you have to be careful not to abuse it. You try to put the trust in the kids and the parents, you know, because you're talking about a time for fall coaches when they're trying to get their season started. In many cases, there's tryouts. If you start giving up too many days, man, that first game's right around the corner. And, you know, I guess the one thing I'll throw in there before Derek goes here, I think expectations have to match, guys. You know, I'm okay as long as parents and fans are okay with outcomes too, because here's what I always say. You can't have it both ways. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's just like with any summer activity, you can't watch the rest of the league do it a certain way and then you not do it that way and then think you're going to win at or above your talent level. Do you follow what I'm saying there, Derek? Cause I think sometimes mm-hmm, it gets mm-hmm. abused that way. You know what? I know you are really, really busy. I really enjoyed reading some of your stuff there where you were getting out early, not necessarily as preview articles, but just almost to get a feel of emptying the notebook on,
sure.
You know, what was up with some of these teams. Did you come across any of this where, hey, we don't have all of our kids here cause of fair or this or that or anything on this topic?
Yeah, and a lot of the notebook obviously was just based, you know, fully focused on football, and so I mean I kind of got a lot of just the football feel of things, but there were teams where, you know, they said, well, you know, we don't have this kid here today because he's showing at the fair or he stays at the fair, but there were also programs where they said, you know, we've got everybody here, and then when you ask them, well, nobody's at the fair, no, they're here, they're committed to here. So I think it's a difference in coaching style, coaching, like you said, expectations. If they had a uniform expectation throughout the league, which would never happen, as we both know, sure. You know, then this wouldn't even be a topic. But I think it's, again, one of those things where it's coach by coach, player by player, and situation by situation. I guess, personally, I can totally understand where – you know, say you did have you were in 4-H and you were, you know, you were legitimately out at the fair every day doing something for 4-H and you're actually contributing to the fair society, if you would. But if you're out there, you know, walking around eating steak on a stick and you just don't want to, you know, sweat in your helmet, I mean, come on, you know. So, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You're spot on when you kind of have to watch. If I was a coach, I would watch situation by situation.
Yeah, because Bruce, I think what's interesting about this is I know people are going to talk about, you know, a transfer here or there. They're going to talk about a kid repeating the eighth grade here or there. There are all these other things that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. But once all that's done, I still, as a coach, say it still comes down to the fact that oftentimes your champions are developed through the hard work and development of their skill set. You know, it's one of those things where Uniota, Dena, Zane Trace baseball year round simply put more kids in Legion ball. They simply put more kids in fall ball. And as a result, they're very difficult to build programs against that are mainstays. You know, Uniota basketball, they're loaded, and I understand they've had kids come in from the outside or whatever, but I'm telling you right now, there's three or four players in that program I know for a fact outwork the rest of the league 10, 11 mm-hmm. months out of the year. Ella Skeen, Southeastern, the Uniota girls, some of the groups that's in that sophomore junior class, the amount of time they put into basketball is insane. PV football, I can guarantee you percentage of kids per enrollment, I'll guarantee you there's no other team in Southern Ohio that gets the percentage in the weight room in grades 6 through 12 that particular school gets for football. So, you know, it's just that's the way I feel about it. So I'm all for other activities. I'm a teacher. I'm an educator. So I understand that there's value in 4-H. There's value in the family time. I'm not putting sports over top. I'm simply saying that your expectations have to match up. You can't be one of those people that just pick and choose which off season, in this case, first week of real season practice that you want to attend and then think that you're going to match up with everybody else around.
All righty. Well, those are three good topics, and we'd like to hear your feedback on any of those that you agree with, any of those you disagree with. I'm sure there's thoughts all around the board out there on those three topics, and we'll give you the contact information here in just a little bit. Let's move on, Shane, to our hurry-up offense brought to them by Crown Hill Golf Club.
Yeah, let's give Crown Hill Golf Club another shout out. You know, I would encourage people, if you're going to plan your next outing, think about Crown Hill. Give Kevin a call there. You know, their banquet facility up there is phenomenal. I know I played in a couple outings this year. I've been up there a couple more times to play. I want to say it seats almost 200 people. So if you have special events, charity fundraisers, family reunions, meetings, anything at all, they have good catering. They have it's just really, really a good facility. Again, give Kevin a call, 740-986-4653. Tell him SVC Sports Talk sent you. So Bruce, it's kind of our first go at it here in the early season. So let's go ahead and take a look at our first hurry up offense.
In looking at all the girls' sports this fall, give the fans one elite star you expect to shine brighter than all the rest.
Well, Shane, I'll go ahead and go first here. I'll pop in, and I'm going to say that I've got Montana Myers. I'm going to go the soccer route. Montana Myers from Mignota. I know everybody talks about Jalen Campbell there. I know everybody talks about Kylie Bethel there up front in their offense. But a lot of people don't realize what Montana Myers actually does for that team. She is imperative to that Sherman's defense. She's on the back line. She's a captain, a senior this year. And she's been really good for the last couple of years. Just nobody knows her. Nobody knows her name. So I'm going with her. I think that I think she'll have a big year, and I think the Sherman's will be very dangerous.
You know, Derek, you've done a good job throughout some of your coverage here in the early going. We've heard Alex Evans, obviously, in volleyball. If you read my article, I threw out four or five names from Chandler to Skeens to Everts to Shea and so forth. But what about Sylvia Gray? You know, when you look at tennis, I think we almost just ended up taking for granted last year that she was going to win every match she played. And it kind of goes back to what I said earlier. I don't think we want to just look past the regular season of when a kid goes out consistently and wins every night. So I think that's going to be another kid that just continues to get better and better and shine pretty bright here in the fall.
Now let's go to the boys. Give the fans another elite star you expect is ready for a monster season.
I really think that Huntington quarterback Elijah McCloskey is going to have a big year. In that spread offense with Scott Keller there, he's in the shotgun. He has time. He can roll out. He's a dual threat if he wants to run the ball. Scott Keller, if you look at his history, has a decorated history of really making quarterbacks really good. And he's already got a talented kid in Elijah. Not like he has to do a lot of work just to put the talent on the field. So I think he'll really have a big year. He's got about a five-man rotation at receiver. I tell you what, Huntington is a dark horse sleeper. I'm not saying they'll win the league. I'm just saying with Elijah McCloskey at quarterback, they have a chance.
Well, Derek, we were on the same track here. You know, I at least in my notes put down the Showblock Calvin and some of the Piketon golfers we mentioned earlier. But we got on the same wavelength here when I was thinking of our returning quarterbacks, McCloskey, Newland, Ruby. But I'm going to tell you who I had down without question is Zach Gibson, signal caller up at Westfall. This kid is really, really unique. You're talking about a kid that played some wide receiver last year with a talented Jude kid. Jude went down. He moved over to quarterback. I had a chance to watch him play one of those games when he's a quarterback, and this kid's a difference maker. I mean, he's taking every snap now. Westfall, I noticed in some of your work, Derek, I'll give you another shout-out here, 50-plus kids out on the roster, a lot of those linemen returning. I'm telling you, if some of those kids up front are ready to take the next level, this kid is really special. Wait and watch the numbers that the Gibson kid puts up this year.
Which of the fall league races do you expect will have the most wire-to-wire excitement?
Honestly, I think for me as a fan, I'm going to have to go to volleyball. If I'm taking me out of the media completely, I think it's volleyball, and I think this is why. I think you got Uniota Southeastern at the top of the town. And Shane, I'll kind of kick it back to you in your article. You mentioned that as well. Uniota Southeastern are really the two, you know, workhorses, if you would, in that league. And then you got Adina, who people say is young. People say, well, they're a couple years away now. Well, they've got Laura Smith. So I tend to, you know, agree to disagree on that. And then you got Piketon with their two big hitters and Macy Conley, their setter back. You know, I think you got a top four there. And then the bottom four, in my mind, I guess, are always solid as well. I mean, we both know in the SEC, you don't play good on a night, you get beat. So the volleyball race is always one of my favorite to cover. So I guess I'm being biased. I'm going to go with volleyball, and I'm going to stick to it.
Well, obviously in volleyball, Adina doesn't even know what the phrase a few years away means. That hasn't been used at Adina in like 30 years. You know, golf's obviously excited with Pike and Uniota. I don't know how much people really get into that. I'm going to say football here, guys. Maybe Derek and I are switching gears a little bit. Usually I'm the volleyball answer. But the reason I say football, and maybe Zane Trace or someone like that will prove me wrong again, but it seems like on paper, Derek, and reading your stuff, I kind of feel like I'm on the right path here. It seems like the Zane Trace Uniota has in Piketon just taken maybe just a baby step back, and it seems like a lot of these other schools have taken a baby step forward. So could that equal maybe an upset in a sport like football that usually doesn't equal upsets? If we just would end up getting one of them, boy, could it shake up a standings, because keep in mind, football, you don't have that double round. You know what I mean? If you lose one of them, you're pretty much out. If you lose one, you shouldn't. So I'm going to say football from that aspect, Bruce, could be interesting.
Which fall coach is dealing with the biggest expectations?
This could be partly my fault, but I've got to go with Southeastern's Evan Gallagher out there with the Panthers. You know, I know his players. I'm talking to even running back Carson Stoffer, and we know about Carson, how good he is. You know, he said this is an expectation now to be in week 11. If you look at the history, how many times Southeastern been in week 11? You know, and that's what I'm saying. This is an expectation in that program. And I'm so Evan Gallagher's got his kids. They're ready to think about playoff football. They're ready to think about an SEC title. You know, but he's created high expectations for himself, and I think that's good. I think that's good for a program. If you don't create high expectations, you don't have something to shoot for. Why are you even doing it? So I'm going to go out with Evan Gallagher, and I think honestly that the Southeast has a chance to do both of those things.
Well, I'm sure Evan appreciates that. The I know. How about Coach Coons there at Zane Trace? All he does is take over the program that's won the league forever and a day, and you know he steps into that. I know, you know, maybe you throw Jimmy Hutton in there. I'm gonna say Natalie Stawley. You know, she comes into Uniota and as a first year coach. The good news is you have talent, but the bad news is this group went 21-4 last year. You know what I'm saying? It's one of those things that there's not a lot of ways to go up. I think the thing with her is she bleeds purple and gold. She's been a Uniota lifer. She has a great love for the school and the kids. She's Diamond. Competitor all the way back to her playing days there at Uniota. I've known her a long time and real excited for her and the opportunity that she's getting here as a first-year head coach.
And that is our hurry-up offense for this episode of SVC Sports Talk, brought to you by Crown Hill Golf Club. Give them a call, and they are ready to do some neat stuff for you in your golf game and parties and so forth up there. You know, as we were talking there, our fourth question was about expectations. Guys, do you really think that expectations are fair? I mean, is that just part of being a coach or is and being on the team?
Well, I think, Derek, I'll jump in there first. I think being a coach myself, I think what happens is rarely is the Derek Webb at the Chillicothe Gazette going to put more pressure than I put on myself. Now, what happens with me sometimes, I'm so competitive, maybe my expectation isn't quote-unquote fair, but it's just what I expect of myself. I think what probably happens, a lot of coaches look at it from the process and then trying to reach that goal. So what I mean by that is, you know, a lot of times you don't look at it as, man, I want to compete for a district title this year. You're looking at it as, gosh, I just want to get our team in a place where over the next week we get a little bit better here, and then I want to get a little bit better here. And as a result, you put yourself in a position by the end of the year to reach that expectation. You know, in my answer, you look at someone – like Coach Stawley there at Uniota, you do take over a program that was 21-4. But again, I say at 21-4, they didn't win the league there. So it was a challenge that maybe that's still out in front of them. Obviously, the tradition of Adina, the talent of Southeastern, you know, Jimmy Hutton was a name I had on my list there too. You know, this is obviously a year he's built up for. They were on the brink of doing some really special things last year. I mean, they did do some special things, but I mean, even beyond that I'm sure they have their sights set on. So yeah, Bruce, I think it depends on what you're considering fair. I think they're fair. Obviously they're not all going to reach them because many of them are trying to accomplish the same thing.
Yeah.
But I think the thing of it is you know, if Uniota Volleyball goes out and finishes second, wins a sectional title, and wins 20 games again, does that mean they didn't reach expectation? Well, that's a little bit harsh. You see what I'm saying? That's a great season. But I'm sure they would tell you that there's some goals that maybe would go unmet. Does that make sense? You know what I mean? I think it's harsh just to say, oh, they failed. Well, that's ignorant. You know what I mean? Whenever you win 20 games and you accomplish some of those things I just mentioned. But I think, you know, when you're looking at Southeastern Volleyball, Nadina Volleyball, Uniota Volleyball, you know, he mentioned Southeastern Football, there's certain things that they may not accomplish everything, but that doesn't mean that the entire season goes for naught.
Okay. Derek, any thoughts on expectations since you set them?
Yeah, right. I'm over here doing it. I think for the most people I've talked to, they're realists. And they will say, okay, yeah, we're not going to be very good this year. Or, you know, we really have really high expectations here when they actually should. So I guess in a broad spectrum, I would say, yes, the expectations are fair because of that, because people are smart enough to know, hey, we're young this year. Hey, we've got 22 returners and, you know, 21 of them are returning lettermen. So in most situations around this area, I think expectations are fair. We're not talking about Ohio State when, you know, they – have graduated everybody in that senior class, and they have a freshman quarterback that's never stepped foot on a football field, and they think, oh, well, we're going to go 10-0 and make the playoffs. Right. You're not, you know. So I think it's different around this area. I would say that yes, the expectations are fair around this area.
Okay, no, just kind of thought I'd throw that in there. The expectations, again, Shane, you talked about defining terms. Of course, you have to define what are your expectations too, and I think that that goes somewhere too. Well, let's move on to football, and here we've had some fan feedback, and so we're just going to kind of dive into these. I'm going to throw this after I mention them, I'll just throw them to Shane and let him kind of explain the fan feedback, and then he can follow up as he and Derek discuss it. The first topic is Piketon questions, Shane.
Yeah, well, we get a lot of great support from the Piketon community on SVCSportsZone.com, and the Piketon football team has really been heavy in the inbox. Mm-hmm. One that jumps out at me was kind of being a little bit more detailed and wondering, with all the pieces they have coming back, would they be able to replace some of that star power that they lost? You know, as Derek said in his articles, and I think a lot of people who follow the SVC know, you know, just because of Berkheimer or Veach or you know, some kids like Mullins, Robertson, some of those kids graduate, they return a lot of kids. So they're asking, are they going to be able to replace those star power to kind of reload and stay there at the top? Because keep in mind, Derek, they were what? They were just basically a Hail Mary and then maybe an instant replay away from winning the league and going to the playoffs, right? I mean, it was pretty tight finish for them. So a kid that jumps out, and I actually had a chance to watch them scrimmage at Memphis. I went down to Memphis and watched them play a little bit, and boy, could you see up front the growth and the strength. I did question maybe a little bit of their overall team speed. You know, the one thing Berkheimer does for you, Derek, is every now and then, you know, a play that he used to turn into a 55-yard touchdown now all of a sudden might just go for an 8-yard gain and someone's getting caught from behind, you know. So, but it's unfair when a kid's taking his first year of snaps to maybe comparing to a Berkheimer. But, yeah, I think Preston Thacker is a name that's kind of come up on my radar, maybe replacing a talent like a Mullins. I know he's going to be a junior. He's going to have to step up a little bit, just talking to some former players there through email. Chase Grooms is another one who I knew behind Veach there last year could really make some plays. Just I know you had a pretty good feel for Piketon's football team too, Derek. They're just so well coached. You got to feel like they're at least going to be a factor, even if they can't win it. They are going to be a factor, and who does?
Absolutely. You know, I'm going to throw out some names to you on their offensive line because I think that's important. Absolutely,
good group. Yeah.
Kenny Blair is 6'3", 265 pounds. Caleb Knopf, by the way. That's one of the toughest names to spell. If you get that name, C A E L E M, 5'11", 220, and we all know about Colton Pinwell. He's a returning starter and really the anchor of that line. 5'10", 260. They've got some beef up front.
Yeah, they do.
And they're going to be able to run the ball with returning running back Zane Barker. So I think we're going to see a different Piketon team this year. Whether Cannon Pack or Connor Galloway is at quarterback, they're still having that battle out in camp now. We're going to see a different Piketon team this year, but I still think that Piketon is a contender. If they can get it together, they've got Heath Jones, a linebacker, who's one of
good
the most,
player. Good player, yeah.
One of the most underrated players in the SEC, in my opinion. The kid is everywhere. They have three of their four returners on the in the defensive secondary, except Mullins, like you said. I just really think Piketon is overlooked this year, and Tyler Guyon's a great coach. So the Red Streaks is really surprising people this year.
Yeah, I agree, Bruce. I was real impressed with them up front when I watched them in person, yeah.
Well, with youth, we've kind of touched on Piketon. What about Paint Valley and their youth situation?
Yeah, I guess you could really throw a lot of situations in here. You know, you look at Huntington finally growing up with McCloskey as a junior, Gavin Snyder as a senior. You know, Gavin's obviously a kid that flirted with 1,000 yards on one side of the ball and 100 tackles on the other. You know, Paint Valley obviously led by Newland there at quarterback. You're looking to see, you know, Coach Holland told me the other day that, yeah, they are young and they're still got to get a little stronger, but this is one of the faster teams he's had on defense. Now it looks like the Ison kid's going to miss, you know, possibly the entire season, which is a huge loss. But again, they're just going to go, you know, appointment to appointment, I think, with the doctor there on that back and see what happens there. But, you know, we talk about how Southeastern's grown up with Ruby, and you mentioned the great backs led by Stouffer there. And, you know, I don't know, Derek, all these groups, Westfall's in that mix, all these groups that are growing up, I said earlier, are they going to be able to close the gap on a Uniota, on a Zane Trace, on a Piketon? And I guess the answer is we'll wait and see. Some of those people might still tell you they're a year away, but man, if you come through the preseason, or I shouldn't say the preseason, the non-league season, you know, healthy, and you get into week five, you get into week six, and now all of a sudden that quarterback or that running back who played as a freshman, played as a sophomore, now all of a sudden you're getting 16 games into your career, Derek. A couple of these teams could be awfully dangerous the second half of the season. Anybody in that group of young people, I know I've already mentioned Gibson. You've already mentioned McCloskey. I know the Ruby kid's special. Newland's obviously primed for a big year. Out of those young quarterbacks and some of those teams coming up, anybody jumping out at you that you think can get really dangerous here into the second half of the year?
I mean, honestly, I'm kind of, again, sometimes we disagree, sometimes we're on the same wavelength. This is one of those times where we're on the same wavelength. You know, the it's really exciting for the future of the league because you do have so much youth at the quarterback position. And you do mention Lane Ruby. You do mention even Elijah McCloskey as a junior. You can mention him. But Bryce Newland, out of that group, out of the group we mentioned that you mentioned, I think Bryce Newland has the best ball. I think he's the best pocket passer in the league as a sophomore. I mean, if you look at McCloskey, he's got the most experience, but what did he do last year? We haven't seen him a lot in the pocket.
Sure,
he rolls out. He tucks the ball and runs. Bryce Newland is not going to tuck the ball and run.
Now, do you think like McFadden and McDonald and some of those guys at Paint Valley with their speed could be a big factor in terms of how Bryce develops, so having some playmakers?
Because
you almost feel like the playmakers are getting older with him.
Sure, and they are, and they're maturing as Bryce matures. You know, Cruz McFadden, I think, is really – look, his last name is McFadden. Okay, that's all I need to know. He's a great athlete. And I think that connection – we saw that in week one last year, Shane. They had – on in their first game together, they throw a touchdown pass to Cruz McFadden. Only ball he caught all game, and it was an 8-yard touchdown pass, and they win by almost a touchdown. So they're a difference maker in that offense. And then you throw in the other kids that maybe a lot of us don't know about just yet. And
you have a lot of those track kids, Jim, where they won the league in track there. They have a lot of that speed on the outside. And again, I think that's where Coach Holland and Coach Mettler and Coach Miller and some of those guys are talking to me about how fast they are. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. More fan feedback here. And Derek, I think you touched on this one, so we might go to you first. But is Southeastern really capable of being better than Uniota and Zane Trace?
You know, I really think that they are. I'm going to get probably raked over the coals with some emails for this, but I'm definitely thinking that Southeastern can beat Uniota this year. I'm just going to go out there and say that, put it on your bulletin board, do whatever. But I really like Southeastern. I think that Southeastern's problem is going to be up front. They have a lot of good skill players. they have your Carson Stouffer, your Greg Rager, your Dakota Houser, who's a complete difference maker. And then they have the quarterback that has the IQ to play that position in Lane Ruby. So, and then obviously you have a lot of two-way players there at Southeastern. All of those same kids are going to be on the field, defense.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with Southeastern is going to be up front. That's the challenge that Coach Gallagher has given his offensive line. Like, hey, look, you know, we've got to replace some guys. You guys have to be good. You guys have to be the bulk of our team. We have to rely on the offensive line. If our big Isaiah LaFontaine, I believe I'm saying that right, if he can take that line and transform and put them to the next level, I really do think they can beat Unyoda. Now, Zane Trace is a different animal. Zane Trace didn't rebuild. They reloaded.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people think, well, Austin Harris is gone. Well, that's nice, but Zane Trace just plugged right into the equation and Etheridge Gaines that a lot of people don't realize he had 712 rushing yards last year or just 126 carries. I mean, they have speed, they have talent, and they're big up front. So I think Southeastern, if they want to win the league, if anybody wants to win the league, they have to beat Zane Trace first. To be the best, you have to beat the best. And that will be the defining game for Southeastern. I honestly think that they have, without Edler there at Unyoda, I'm just not sold on Unyoda, and I could be completely wrong. I think the Fisher kid's an athlete. I think he's going to be good. Gabe Fisher, we all know who he is. And I think they do have some speed as well, but I think Southeastern matches up better with Unyoda, I should say, maybe, than they do Zane Trace.
Shane, do you care to comment
on
that one?
Yeah, you know, I really respect the job that Evan's done there at Southeastern. I think my biggest thing is when I see these smaller programs, Southeastern, I see Huntington's numbers, I see even Paint Valley, what happened, say, a year ago when Jay Riley goes down and the domino effect that has on the smaller school. I just feel like up front, the depth and the ability to not have to go both ways all the time in certain positions, I think, is where Zane Trace and Unyoda, even Piketon in certain areas. It looks like to me in that scrimmage the other night, Piketon had very few kids going both ways. It's just, I think that's the challenge, is when you get into week 5, 6, 7, you know, last year, if you remember, Derek, Southeastern was hit a little bit by the injury, and everybody's going to have injuries. But when you start at 55 on your roster and have injuries, it's not quite the same, you know.
Right.
You know, I think Huntington's caught some criticism for cutting some scrimmages short here and there. But I think, well, when you have 28 and then 27 on your roster, you're smart enough to realize, ooh, if the wrong person gets hurt and that number drops to 23 or 4, we may not win a game. So it's. I think Southeastern, I think Huntington, I think Paint Valley, those schools have to really be aware of that. So, you know, I certainly respect the job that Southeastern's done. I just need to see how they perform in the non-league, and maybe even more importantly, how healthy do they reach week 4 when it goes time to get into the league.
Quickly, guys, we're asked for major predictions for football. Do you have any?
Man, that's a tough one there. you know, honestly, if I had to...
I think you've already made
I'll say this. Well, that's true. Southeastern beats Unyoda, right?
Right.
If I'm picking a league winner right now, it's got to be Zane Trace. I know that goes against what a lot of people think. Well, Zane Trace, they lost this, but I'm a big believer in to be the best, you have to beat the best. And Zane Trace for 4 years has been the best. New coach, new system, I get it. But you know, when talking to Coach Coons, he told me that, you know, the players are really starting to get it. They're starting to pick it up, and they like the atmosphere that's going on in practice. And I tell you what, with that defense that, you know, returned 8 of 11 starters, I believe, if they're getting it and they're big and they're physical, I believe in Zane Trace. That would be my biggest prediction, I'd say.
Hard not to agree, Bruce. I mean, with everything that they have coming back, the new facility, there's a lot of excitement there. I again, in my prediction, I'll hold true that I do think the gap's going to close. I think a lot of these teams that are a year older now, they're going to close the gap on a Piketon, Unyoda, Zane Trace, which I think is going to make for some really competitive Friday nights. But if we're sitting here and we haven't even played week one yet, sure, Zane Trace on paper has to be the favorite.
All righty. Well, we're going to move along now and shift to the volleyball court, where Derek talks about one of his favorites, major predictions, and Shane defends his favoritism of a certain position. Episode 190 rolls on here on SVC Sports Talk, and we're going to bring the guys back in now for some volleyball. And Derek, we're going to pick on you first here.
Sure.
You have spoken highly of Piketon throughout the last few years with the improvements they've made. What are your expectations for them this fall?
Well, I think the main thing for Piketon is they have to find a replacement for Madison Conley back there as their libero last year. If they do that, they're going to be just as good as they were last year, or even better. I really like the double trouble, as I call them, with Jordan Morris and Cammie Chandler. They're on their outside hitters. They have their same setter back in Macy Conley. They have their same coach back in Allison Robbins. So I my expectations for them, I think they can win 15 to 20 games. They do have a pretty good non-conference schedule when you look at Portsmouth, Notre Dame. And there's a few others that I believe in there. I know they have scrimmage Wheelersburg. But I think they can win 15 to 20 games, and I really think they can compete for a district title if they find a replacement for Madison Conley and a bona fide replacement for Madison Conley. Another factor for them, too, is they lost Dakota Zaff at the net, and she was a big blocker. She could be up with the net with Cammie, with Jordan, when the other one was hitting the ball or the other one on defense. So if they can find a couple replacements, a couple kids to plug in and just kind of keep it afloat for a little bit, they may not, set the world on fire when they begin, still figuring stuff out. But I really think that they can contend for a district title again.
Okay. Now, what about major predictions for volleyball? Shane, we'll go to you first.
Well, I talked about it a lot in my article. If you haven't had a chance to get my take, that article's still up. I think, what Derek just said was spot on with Piketon. I think what happens is the key to them is, because of a couple of those holes he just mentioned, even though Chandler and Morris are really, really special, take over the match type of hitters, I think those holes here and there is going to make it tough for them to compete with the top three teams. But I think the key to them is being efficient enough to make sure you beat the teams you're supposed to beat. And I think that they can become a top half program. As far as those top three teams, Uniota on paper, I think, is the most complete when you look at pass set hit. I think, obviously, Southeastern's question mark comes, will they be able to pass the ball to allow Goble to use Skeens and company across the net? I listed all those incredible hitters for Southeastern there in my article. They are really, really good at the net, where Dean is on the other side. They graduate a lot of power at the net. They have some kids that are going to try to, with Stark, and they're going to have some kids trying to prove themselves at the net. But the one thing they're always going to do with a great setter like Shea is they're going to play really efficient defensively. They're going to serve it with efficiency, and they're not going to beat themselves. So, those are the three teams at the top. I think on paper, Uniota is the most complete. But, boy, is it going to be a lot of fun to watch those head-to-head matchups throughout the year.
Derek?
I'm going to go, Shane, here I am again setting expectations. But I can tell you what, I really think that Southeastern has a shot at a regional title this year. I'm going to go out and say that. They bring almost all of their hitters back. They lost a couple seniors on defense last year, and I believe it was Courtney Bennett and Danica Moore. But when you bring Ella Skeens, when you bring Jessica Boldy, Skylar Heiss, the list goes on and on. Sierra DeLong, and then your setter with Lauren Goble. I just think, and Jimmy Hutton and Paul Tenado, by the way, do a fantastic job with
they
that
do.
Program.
They do.
I really think that if there is a team in this area that's going to win a regional title, the Southeastern Panthers are it. I'll say that. Sorry, Jimmy. Good luck. But I really think that they have the talent this year to do that. I really do.
All right. Well, another fan feedback here, Shane. This one, fan has heard and read many times that you feel the setter is the most important position in volleyball. So they want to know, first, why is that? And secondly, do you think you're not appreciating the importance of a good pass as well as the incredible power of the elite hitters?
Well, I don't think that's the case at all. I think, in the question before, the reason I didn't get too much into Matty Eberts there at Uniota
is the fact of this. I knew this question was coming up, and I think she's the prime example. I mean, you're talking about a kid that at her size and length, her athleticism, her hands, her vision, there's just simply nothing on the court that she can't do from the 5-1 setter position. She can get involved defensively up at the net, above the net. She can back off and defend as a passer. Like I said, she can athletically with her reach go and get what happens. Here's what happens, guys. A great team obviously has all three levels. You're going to have a great pass. You're going to have a great set. You're going to have hitters across the net that can put it away. That's why Uniota has a chance to be a great team. You obviously Pinkerton and Coleman and so forth back there give quality passes. And then when you have Taylor and you have the likes of McGlone and Fisher and Hall and so forth all the way across the net, you have the ability to be really dynamic. But I think what happens to me is this. The elite setter, especially in the 5-1 offense, when you look at like a Shea or you look at an Eberts or you look at a Goebel, I think even Conley's trying to put herself into that discussion, Derek. And I think what happens is the really elite ones is if you watch a Maddie Eberts play, she can take the below average pass and she can still go get the ball up into a spot to be attacked. At the same time, the setters can take you. I saw this even with Goebel. I thought this was some of her best improvement. The other night, just in the preview, I noticed that her ability with her vision to look off the defense and maybe use a back setter, go to a different secondary hitter and give a hitter an open net. So what happens is the setter who's going to touch it every single time over can take the below average pass or can take the below average hitter. Maybe below average is the wrong term, but that's what happens. So now what happens is when you add in a really good passer, like I just mentioned with Uniota, that's why we say with Piketon and Southeastern, the passing is going to be the key. That's why we say the hitters growing at Edina is going to be the key, is because it does take them all. And I'm not trying to take that value off at all. I'm just saying that what happens is I was even surprised a little bit the other night, guys, that some of the hitters still don't trust a talent like Eberts. You know, too many times you'll see Uniota hitters a foot off the net trying to go play a ball. You know, get out of her way. Get back to the 10-foot line and get ready to hit. You know what I mean? If one thing she's proven to you, 9 chances out of 10, she's going to put the ball up there in a position where you can attack it. So that's one of the things I'd like to see a little bit more aggressive in both the Southeastern and the Uniota attack is trust the elite setters you have and let them do their job. You know, the one advantage and even Eberts has over Goebel is you're talking about her reach. I mean, she's got to be what, 5'8", 5'9", maybe, I don't know, height-wise. So, just her coverage and her ability to get to things is just really special. So I'm the first to admit, I say it in my articles, I've said it on the podcast, Bruce, I don't really doubt the fact that I probably cheat my bias toward the setter position because I think it is the quarterback, it is the point guard, it is the catcher of the volleyball team, and I just think the person's that important. Does that mean I don't value a Pinkerton in the back row or a Coleman of Uniota? Absolutely not. Does that mean I don't look at Piketon and Southeastern as needing the quality passers, or I don't appreciate some of the defense that you're going to watch in Edina play? I certainly do. I just think that's the position that makes it all go.
All righty. We're going to move quickly, guys, into our post-game comments. We're running a little long tonight, but our post-game comments brought to you by C&K Athletic Equipment. Again, give them a call up at Circleville, 740-477-9828, or stop by at 116 East High Street. They're in Circleville. Lots of SVC school apparel and fitness gear. They'll fix you right up. They've been doing a lot more in the SVC here recently, and we really appreciate that and their sponsorship as well. Before we get to post-game comments, though, Shane, want to also give everybody contact information, because while it's the same for you, it may have changed for our boy Wonder, who has come back. For Shane, it's admin1 at svcsportzone.com for the email. He also maintains 2 profiles on Facebook where you can contact him, and you can follow him on Twitter at svcsportszone.com. Derek, I'm not sure, to tell you the truth. I think I saw a different email address for you. Is that correct?
They made me a doctor, Bruce. It's drwebb at
Chillicothe. Oh, my goodness.
Dr. Yeah, no, it's crazy.
Dr. Webb at Chillicothe Gazette.com. Right. Is that it? Okay.
That's right. That's it.
I had thought I had seen that out there, and I wasn't too sure whether that was a misprint or whether that was just Dr. Webb, I guess. Oh, boy. What a big head, I'm sure. And then Twitter, of course, that hasn't changed, correct?
Hasn't changed,
but boy, is it busy with good stuff anymore. And we're so glad to have you back, Derek. We really are. Twitter is at DW1509 is his handle there, and he is burning up the Twitter waves, and we're glad to see that back. But we want to know what's coming up this week at the Gazette with Derek Webb.
Well, as Shane knows, this is it's beginning of fall sports, so we're busy every night. We've got Shane mentioned Macy Conley down there in Piketon Tuesday night tomorrow. She has she's got a 989 career assists, so we'll be down there for her 1,000th, hopefully. Wednesday we have our first roundtable, our high school football roundtables back, and we'll have that at Jimmy John's with the Zane Trace Pioneers. And Thursday will be at Southeastern at Unioda girls and boys soccer. The SBC boys soccer season starts there. And then Friday, I actually will be at Tillicothe at Taze Valley. We'll also be covering Afrocentric at Paint Valley and Burn Union at Huntington. And then Saturday, I've got Unioda at Chillicothe Volleyball. So it begins. It commences.
Yeah, but you wouldn't rather be anyplace else, would you?
Absolutely not.
That's great. Shane, you've got the same kind of things there for in terms of your workload coming up. What are you looking most forward to this week?
Well, I'm excited. I'm going to get a chance to see Unioda Volleyball a couple times against some good non-league opponents. This weekend I'll see Huntington football. Hope to even get down and see a little non-league volleyball on Saturday. But I'm most excited about the Gazette Roundtable as we start another year. Thoroughly enjoyed that. It sounds like Derek and company there really have some neat ideas from a technology standpoint. So fans are going to get to not only listen live, but get the opportunity to come back and listen to those recorded shows. And so that's probably my biggest thing. And, you know, Bruce, I want to take an opportunity here real quick just to thank you for staying on. Obviously, people who listen to the 7 years, they always know in our seasons for fall, winter, spring that our preview shows have a tendency to run just a little bit longer because we don't want to cheat any of the major topics. Most of our shows throughout the season will run right around an hour. I think we're going to push an hour and 15 minutes or so tonight, so I appreciate Bruce putting in the overtime with us. Derek, certainly is good to have you back. I look forward to working on the roundtable with you later this week. And fans, I thank you for the 7 year run here. Let's keep it going. Give us the feedback. I look forward to some great shows in the future. So, on that note here, since it's got to be getting close to Bruce's bedtime, we're going to get out of here, and we'll see you next week. So until next time, here for Triple Crown Family Fun Center and all the other sponsors on the website, for Bruce Knox and all the people behind the scenes and at DBK Media Services, and for Derek Webb, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting SVCSportZone.com, where we are 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC, 100% of the time.